Welcome back to Air Talk on 89.3 KBCC. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about dress codes and fashion and how, over the course of history, they have really paralleled social movements and political change, the expansion of rights for women and people of color, all of that coming up in just a couple minutes with the author of a new book. But first, we do know some things for certain about the origins of COVID-19, like the first cases began appearing in the city of Wuhan, China, a little over a year ago. But beyond that, the story grows murky and conflicting narratives have developed among researchers about how this virus came to infect human lungs. Was it housed in a lab and mistakenly released? Did the virus develop and spread in nature? A World Health Organization team has recently been in China working with scientists there trying to crack the case. And we want to talk about the forensics of pandemics with my next guest, Richard McKay, historian of medicine and epidemics and Wellcome Trust Research Fellow in the Department of History and Philosophy of Science at the University of Cambridge. He's also author of Patient Zero and the Making of the AIDS Epidemic. Welcome, Professor McKay. I really appreciate you joining me. You know, first off, I mentioned that there is this raging debate online about the origins of COVID-19. A lot of it veers into conspiracy theory, but it seems to be this argument between, you know, a lab leak situation or a natural development and spread of the virus. I know that we're not going to solve this mystery here, but I'm curious if you have an opinion about the way this debate is unfolding.
That's an excellent question. And I'm drawing on my knowledge in detail of the AIDS epidemic and how search for the origins of that pandemic began, but also more broadly in terms of how societies attempted to try and understand where diseases came from. And so in many ways, the way that the investigation is happening at the moment, this joint mission from the WHO and scientists from China, it's relatively unprecedented. It's really kind of historically specific in this current moment. But what's interesting is that regardless of what period you're looking at, whether you're thinking about ancient Greek explanations for how disease started through the Middle Ages into, you know, the last few hundred years, and even much more recently into our more current understandings of diseases being spread by germs, whatever period you're in and whatever belief system or explanation system, there's always been a sense that it's important to go back to the earliest possible cases to understand what clues can come from that.
Your writing, as you mentioned, is focused on the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And in the case of AIDS, how did researchers go about searching for its origins and charting the disease's early path to spread across the globe?
So there's two parts to the kind of the traditional story. The first part is that the disease AIDS was first recognized and seen to affect gay men in the United States. And as researchers began to investigate these American cases to work out how the condition, or more accurately, the underlying infection causing this condition was spread, they eventually began to trace connections to other similar cases around the world. And then you have this later, kind of this echo, this earlier or later research, which then tried to understand where the silently spreading HIV was being transmitted for decades before it was recognized in the United States. So, and we know that the earliest sample that has been found to be tested and found to be HIV positive was drawn in 1959. And that in what was then the Belgian Congo. And so that gives you an idea of, you know, how long it took, several decades, for the condition to become recognized halfway across the world. And then to be eventually traced back to its origins. But we're talking what makes it unprecedented that there is we're in the middle of a pandemic and we're already investigating its origins. Mm-hmm. That is quite a change from our capabilities in large-scale pandemics in the past.
Hmm. We still don't know for 100% certainty where and how HIV jumped to humans, do we? Will we ever know that?
If it seems, especially in the wake of the publicity around the early years of the AIDS epidemic and the mistaken idea that the epidemic could be traced to a single individual. So this mistaken idea of a patient zero, mm-hmm. which is a phrase that was never intended to carry that explanation and was adopted after the fact by a series of mistakes. But there's been this really confident sense in the general public, it seems, that science ought to be able to find that answer. And the answer is we rarely do. We usually come to a best guess, a sense as to, you know, the most likely explanation, but the surveillance capabilities and usually the delay of time after the initial onset and then the subsequent attempts to find the origins, there's usually a large gap that mm-hmm. prevents us from getting a specific individual to be able to say, well, it began with this individual either having a direct contact with an ancestral with a animal that had the closest related virus, kind of the progenitor virus that then transferred over into humans, a mm-hmm. spillover case, if you will.
I do want to talk about that misinformation element because you write about it so vividly. This misinformation that ended up blaming a French-Canadian flight attendant as this quote-unquote patient zero, as you mentioned, that the phrase really wasn't used before the HIV/AIDS epidemic. This poor gentleman who eventually died of the disease was in some press reports blamed for bringing the disease to the United States in the early 80s. And science now tells us that the disease was spreading in New York and San Francisco before that, early to mid 1970s. Do you see potential for a similar unfair vilification of players in the COVID-19 pandemic that you chronicled in the HIV/AIDS coverage and communication about that disease?
Absolutely. I mean, it certainly doesn't help that on many occasions your former President Trump would make seriously politicized statements directly using the word blaming China as the origins and kind of with explosive language. And so, I mean, that type of scenario certainly raises the temperature for sure. One of the things I think is really fascinating is that the words we've inherited to talk about causation almost tie our hands in terms of the choice of attributing responsibility and blame. And at least in European languages that have drawn on ancient Greek, the word aitia or aition, which is close relative in English would be for etiology, that is the word for cause. And it has kind of joint meaning in ancient Greek for what is responsible, what is to blame. And so you constantly see, I mean, through the ages, that efforts to understand causation of disease are very closely linked, kind of almost, you know, forever linked with attempts to blame. And you see this and it makes sense when you think about all the different ways in which the different systems that we use to explain causation, whether it's religious systems, legal systems, systems of philosophy and or science, causation is key in all of them, and there's often an attempt in those to link to explaining, and a lot of those it can be linked to moral judgment about people's behavior and actions.
I think linguistic psychology and the way that it impacts our conversations about science and everything in our lives is fascinating. And I really encourage people to check out your book, Richard McKay with Cambridge University. He's the author of Patient Zero and the Making of the AIDS Epidemic. Thank you very much for being on Air Talk to talk about the forensics of the COVID-19 pandemic and what we can learn and the ways that we look into the origins of disease. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Back after this quick break.